welcome to the Messiantics Podcast, a podcast about all things Messianic Judaism. Each episode, we will be sharing our opinions as we tackle some of the biggest issues in Messianic Judaism. Now, here's your hosts, Rabbis Eric, David, Jonathan, and Toby.
We're so glad that you've tuned in to listen again this week. We have an episode that we hope will be a blessing as well as interesting to everybody, maybe a little fun. We were talking the other day about secular influence on our walk, on our lives. In other words, movies, TV shows, and other things that God used, even though they were secular, and we're not necessarily endorsing these things by mentioning them, but so many times God uses things outside the sphere of the actual body of Messiah to touch the hearts of his people as they're searching for him. So we thought we would just share in this episode different things, whether it's a book or a movie or a television program, music, something that God used to influence us and draw us near, even though that particular item would not necessarily be something that was godly or righteous in its own making, but just caused us to think about things, which influenced us as we were searching or looking to find the Lord. So I know that Rabbi David had one when I mentioned this that he said jumped right off at him, so I'm going to let him go first.
So one of my favorite movies, I'm not saying it's one of the best movies in the world in terms of like content
and
whatever,
we want to pre-say this one more time. We're going to talk about things that we are not endorsing. We're not saying these are great things. Yeah. These are things you should watch. We're not encouraging any of that. We're just sharing how in our life we can see how God used things outside of the ordinary or outside of the religious or outside of the righteous to affect our hearts and draw us toward his righteousness.
As a, too bad we couldn't plug like a VidAngel discount on the underside of this podcast.
As a setup for why that statement is necessary at the beginning, that we're not necessarily like suggesting you watch these, listen to these, whatever. One of my dad's favorite movies was, I don't know if it still is or not after this incident, was The Frisco Kid. And he swears that he had never seen it outside of the made-for-TV version.
Let me fix this. For many years, from when I came to faith, which was in 1981, until long after my children were born, we did not have a television. So the only movies I watched during that whole time was whenever I was on an airplane and I would watch a movie, or the movies that I saw when I was a kid, which were at my parents' house, which was before they allowed language on TV. They used to edit everything that went on TV. Yeah.
They still do it to an extent.
So I when he says I never saw this movie in its content before, that's why, because I did not see any. All the movies I'd seen up until that point were when I was young, where TV edited for content, or movies that I saw on airplanes, which are also edited for content, or used to be.
So he talked about how much he loved this movie. He had all the young people from the synagogue over once. This was, I don't know, like high school and early college age kids over to the synagogue once. And he was like, hey, let's watch this. One of my favorite movies. Let's watch this movie. And he pulls out, I don't even know, you had the DVD. Or did you? No, streaming wasn't a thing yet.
DVD.
Okay. So he rented the DVD, pops this thing in and starts playing it, thinking he's introducing these kids to this great movie that they've never seen that's going to rock their world and make him the
all-star. Which has a lot of Jewish themes.
Yeah. But then out of nowhere, every third word is an F-bomb or this or that. Oh, I mean, no. It's just constant. Oh, no. He got like maybe 25, 30 seconds into it and was like, nope, we got to back out. I'm sorry. It was a mistake.
Oh, jeez.
So we are not saying that
the movie I remembered.
We are not saying that we recommend you go search for any of these. But no, for me, in all honesty, one of my absolute favorite movies in terms of like this concept that we're talking about right now, one of my absolute favorite movies is Bruce Almighty with Jim Carrey. Which Jim Carrey, you know, whatever, he's questionable whether or not you like him or not. He's you know, kind of typecast as overacting on everything. But this particular movie was just absolutely hilarious. Yeah, you got Morgan Freeman playing God. You got Bruce Almighty playing this guy mad at God about everything in his life, ignoring the fact that 90% of his problems were his own making, but blames it all on God and what have you. So the premise of the movie is that he, you know, kind of flips off God and says, all right, you know, obviously you're not real and whatever. And so God appears and says, all right, here, I'm going to give you my power for, you know, X amount of time over this one city. You can do my job for this one city and you can do anything I can do, but only here. He said, but there's only two rules. You can't tell anybody you're God. And Morgan Freeman says, believe me, you don't want that kind of attention. And then the other rule was you can't mess with free will. And so through the movie, Bruce has this love interest that he's in, and he's trying to figure out how he can make her love him because he's got God's power and whatever. And he keeps, you know, wrestling around with this. And so finally, after he's gone through all these really bad things, he finally decides he's going to start trying to do things right. And he's trying to, like, fix problems and actually do God's job to some degree and help people out and whatever. He runs to Morgan Freeman, and he's just mad because nothing's working out the way he wants, and nobody will believe that he's, you know, in God, and nobody will do whatever. And he runs to Morgan Freeman as God and says, how do you make so many people love you without affecting free will? And Morgan Freeman as God says, if you come up with an answer to that one, let me know. And it just really struck me, like, because that's, God's not wanting robots, right? He didn't create us to be robots. I talk about this a lot in our services. Rabbi Toby just mentioned this in our Bible study last night. He didn't create us to be robots. He didn't create us to be, you know,
Brooke,
whatever.
Actually. Was it Brooke?
It
was Brooke, my wife.
Didn't create us to be robots. He created us to experience his love and to love him. And he wants us to love him, but he wants us to want to love him, right? Not to be forced to. And so that just that one interaction, you know, how can you make people believe in you if you can't affect their free will? And God's response, the, you know, movie version of God's response is, well, if you ever figure that out, let me know. I'd like to know how you figured out how to do that. Not that God doesn't know everything, but God, you know, is well aware that there's no answer to that. There is no making people love you if they don't want to. And so that, as soon as that this suggestion, this topic was suggested, my brain immediately went there. It's one of my absolute favorite scenes in almost any movie, because it really is. It's a powerful thing. If we don't choose God, then we're not going to have that relationship that God wants with us. He's not going to force it on us.
The first movie that came to my mind is a Marvel movie, and it's not my favorite Marvel movie. It's really good. I mean, it's up there, but it's about a superhero. It's Thor, the very first one.
Okay.
The very first Thor movie. I know you've seen it, Rabbi. Yeah. Have you seen the Thor?
Yeah. The first one's honestly probably my favorite out of the three.
So there's three Thor movies. There's Thor, and then there's Ragnarok, and there's Love and Thunder.
I think Ragnarok's my favorite out of
them. Yeah, I think it's everybody's favorite is Ragnarok. I understand why. Yeah, Jeff Goldblum. Anyway, but the first movie, Thor, is about – it's his origin story.
Yeah.
And when I watched that movie for the first time, which wasn't even at the theaters, I rented it, I'm pretty sure I cried because of the message of the entire movie. God spoke to me so powerfully. And just to tell you how God spoke to me through it. So at the beginning, Thor is the prince of Asgard. So his dad is the king. His dad is Odin, which is Anthony Hopkins. He is brash. He is arrogant. He thinks he is...
it on a stick.
He is it, man. And he carries his hammer, which only Thor can wield. So only Thor can carry this hammer, Mjolnir.
Yeah.
No one else can carry it. It's only him. And the only person that can carry Mjolnir is someone that's worthy of the power of Thor. But he is brash and arrogant. What he causes a major problem at the beginning of the movie because of his arrogance. He ultimately starts a war that his dad has to come in and stop, you know. Thor is ready to be king. He's ready to be the man in charge. What ends up happening is because of his arrogance, his father, Odin, banishes him from Asgard. And the first moment where I get, like, emotional and get, like, really moved is when he banishes Thor. He banishes, literally opens a portal and sends him away from Asgard. He takes his power and all that. Like, he disciplines him. He goes, you're unworthy of this. You're unworthy of that. You're unworthy of these realms. You're unworthy of your friends. You're unworthy of your power. And he takes his hammer and he sends Thor to Earth with mortals, people, you know, regular folks. But the first thing was, before the portal closes, he throws the hammer in to follow him, which is like an opportunity for repentance. Right. I was like, that's what God does. He disciplines us, but there's always a way back.
Yeah.
And through his time in the movie, he's with mortals.
Right.
And he can't. He tries to lift his hammer. There's one part of the movie he gets to where his hammer is, and he tries to lift it, and he can't. And he's just broken over it.
Right.
And he's hanging around with humans. He's learning essentially humility. He doesn't get his power back as Thor. This is a spoiler, but so how does he become Thor again? Because we know he does. It's when he's willing to die for Earth. Because the bad guy who, you know, I'm not going to get into all it, but the bad guy is obviously trying to attack Earth. It's when he stands in front of the bad guy and says, take me instead. Don't hurt them. And he's willing to die to himself.
Right.
And then here comes the hammer. And man, he comes out and he's fully Thor again. And it's the, and then now the very end of the movie, he says his dad, you know, he's Thor, he's won, he's learned humility, he's who he's meant to be through dying to himself, through being willing to die, through being willing to die and sacrifice.
Right.
That's how he gets his power. And at the very end of the movie, his dad says, you'll be a great king one day. And he turns to his dad and says, there'll never be a greater king than you. And I'm like, man, isn't that how it's supposed to be with the Lord?
Right.
We don't receive power from God until we're willing to give ourselves up.
Right.
For everything. You know, just give everything up for him. And even when all is said and done, we still understand there's no the man in charge, there's no greater king than the Lord himself.
Right.
There's still that submission and humility.
Right.
You know, and I just that movie, I get that message every time I watch it. So
yeah.
That's
Yeah. So I was thinking about
the Frisco Kid.
No, I was not thinking about the Frisco Kid. Although, if you can watch it on
like VidAngel or
television
something.
Or VidAngel, it's an excellent movie and shares some real Judaic themes that are
talking about
are,
Robin Hood Men in Tights.
No, not talking about also Robin Hood Men in Tights, which I've never seen.
Yeah, we're men.
But I was thinking about Fiddler on the Roof.
Okay.
And the reason I was thinking about it was because Fiddler on the Roof shares the message of the Jewish people in a way that I think no other movie has. Mm. And that is that they've been downtrodden, they've been pushed into shtetls, they've been all that, but they still held on to their peoplehood. And there's the scene in the movie where Tevye's talking about traditions and, you know, I don't, and he says, I don't even know why we do these. We just, you know, but
with the tallit, the katan,
the katan. Like, he says,
how did we get this tradition? I'll tell you.
I don't know. But the point is that it made me think about myself and how much of what I was doing as now. Remember, so before I become a believer, I'm listening to Fiddler on the Roof, or watching Fiddler on the Roof, listening to it on the stereo at the house, all that. But it made me think about myself and my relationship with God and how much of what I did was just because it was tradition. It's what we did. It's like eating matzo ball soup.
Right.
Eating matzo ball soup. Matzo ball soup's delicious. Eating matzo ball soup doesn't make me Jewish. And if a Gentile eats matzo ball soup, it doesn't make them Jewish.
Darn.
But there's a tradition to matzo ball soup that is part of what we are, but it's the outflow of who we are, not what makes us who we are.
Right.
And so when I heard him say that, and then the joy at the wedding, and then the you know the torment of the soldiers coming in to destroy the wedding, and all the way through the life of the Jewish people being chased from one nation to another nation to another nation to another nation, all throughout history, and yet holding on to what makes them Jewish. But even in doing so, in some of them, like myself, it wasn't, I didn't know. Why do we do this? Why did we do that? Why did we do that? Now, I was raised in a Jewish home practicing. We went to synagogue every weekend. I went to Hebrew school. I learned a lot of this stuff. But for me, what was the motivation for me to do? Why do I wear a tallit katan? Right. Why do I wear a kippah? Why do I? I know why other people do it. I know that it's part of that, but why do I do it?
Right.
And it made me start questioning who I was as a Jew, who I was in my faith, which ended up bringing me ultimately to agnosticism. I desperately wanted to believe in God, but the actions of my people, the Jewish people, that were contrary to God's covenant, made me wonder if there really was a God. Why didn't the earth get open up and these people get swallowed? Why wasn't this happening? Why wasn't that happening? On top of the questions of why did the Holocaust take place and why did all of those questions made me become agnostic. And it wasn't until I found Yeshua that I ended up finding the questions and the reasons for why I do what I do. So the movie made me question. It made me look. And so when Tevye said, why do we do this? I don't know. It made me as a Jew say, why do I do this? Well, I don't know. I know why it's done, but why do I do it? Mm-hmm. Why is it part of my life? And that led me on the journey that ultimately led me to the greatest Jew ever, yes, Yeshua, and to where I am today. So while it's not a religious movie, it's a movie about Judaism, it's a movie about Jewish people,
yeah,
and there's Jewish themes and religious themes, it's a secular movie.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it caused me to chase after, to look, to question
favorite
who
quote.
I was.
Favorite quote from Fiddler on the Roof.
My favorite quote?
Mm-hmm.
Even a poor tailor deserves a little happiness.
Oh, mine is by far in the wedding scene where they just finished that argument and Tevye is just like, and you can keep your diseased chickens. Because I remember the first time watching that movie, I was sitting upstairs where I used to live in a little cottage at my desk in a rolly chair, and I almost fell out backwards out of the seat laughing so hard. Like, it was one of my favorite quotes still ever.
I think it's not a quote. It's anytime Tevye... There's this particular moment at the wedding of his daughter, Tzidel. She's marrying, you know, the tailor. And he stands up. There's this whole thing about dancing.
Right, yeah.
And he says, I'm going to dance with my wife
right
at the wedding. But before he does, he looks at God real quick. And I thought, and for me, and I'm not Jewish, but for me, I'm like, that's the relationship you want with God.
Right.
Is this personal?
Right.
He would look up at him for a second, just
right
for a second, like.
Right.
And I love
almost kind of breaks the third wall type of a thing.
Yeah.
Hope
and,
it's okay.
Well, because I've heard, and I'm not trying to get theological, but I've heard an Orthodox Jew say, "Well, you know, God is abstract and he's aloof."
Right. Sure.
That's not at all what Scripture teaches, by the way.
Right.
That God is aloof and he's so abstract that he's unknowable.
Right.
I love that Tevye, again, not a religious movie, and we know how he feels about Christianity because he sends his daughter away when she marries a Christian,
right,
one of his daughters, one
right
of his daughters. But that little look up to God was like, man, like, that's the kind of relationship, a daily,
yeah,
over the important things and over the little things like that.
Right.
Yeah, go ahead with yours.
My favorite quote is, again, his interaction with God. Reb Tevye looks up to the sky and goes, I know we're your chosen people, but can't you choose someone else for once?
Yeah, and another part of the movie that made me, that so moved me, is the song, If I Were a Rich Man,
mm-hmm,
where he talks about all the things, the worldly goods, and how, you know, big house and big
right
chickens and ducks and geese and a happy wife and all that. But then the end of the song is, really, what would make me rich if I had the time to sit in the synagogue and pray 7 hours every day? If I could
listen to the holy
listen
men
to the holy, yeah,
mm-hmm,
you know. And so that was, again, it made me look at my life and say, because I remember when I saw that movie, I was like forced to go to synagogue. Like, you went, I went to synagogue when I wanted to, and I went when my parents wanted to, and that meant all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we would sit there, and it was sometimes dry and dead and repetitive and all those things. And I didn't want to. And when I saw that and saw the longing in his eyes as he said the words, this is, would make me the richest man of all, would be to have this desire. You know, if I could have all the riches that I wanted to, I'd trade them all for being able to just sit in synagogue 7 hours every day. And I thought, man, that would be miserable to me.
Mm-hmm.
to spend 7 hours, but what is it that made him
want that?
What relationship? What heart? What did he have that I don't have?
Yeah.
That would make me want to spend 7 hours every day in synagogue. So it was just—it's a powerful movie, and it really changed my life. It really affected me too. I don't think I'd be where I am today if it wasn't for that movie.
Right,
and it is a long movie.
Yeah, and following up that
it has an intermission, right?
Yeah, it has an intermission. Yeah. So
it's
long, old, it has
it's
a
old
break
enough.
In the middle
it's old
of it.
Enough. It has an intermission.
It's like take a break.
So the other movie that I watched around the same time that also caused me to think this way, believe it or not, is Star Wars.
Oh wow!
And that's because of the good and evil theme.
Yeah.
And because of this spiritual, supernatural, religious order,
the Force.
That is, yeah, the Force, Jedi. The religious order, the Jedi's, the you know, and all of that going on contributed to this quest that I had. It kind of motivated me to search for the religious order, the faith order, the belief system. So all that went on, and at the same time that was going on, all of the songs on the radio in the 80s, if you look back, you'll find that they either chose a strong worldliness message or they chose a religious message. And it was funny because there were songs like The Devil in Blue Jeans that came out during that period of time about this woman who shows up at this guy's tempting him to fall into unrighteous activities and stuff. And all of this was going on. And so when I look at that season in my life, I can see how God was using those things that I would listen to, those things that I'd look at, those things that I watched or read to reach through them to me, even though they weren't necessarily things that I would tell people today, hey, go watch this because God will speak to your heart through it, or go listen to this song because God will speak to your heart through it.
Sure.
But it was secular things that really touched me. Rather than, like, I can't point to a moment where my rabbi preached a message in my synagogue and I walked away going, wow, I really want to love God.
Was it Orthodox, conservative?
It was conservadox. I was Orthodox when I was younger, but conservative, leaning toward Orthodox. Okay. But, I mean, I enjoyed the messages the rabbi gave. They were filled with wit and humor and things. Sure. But I can't remember a time that I listened to my rabbi and left going, man, I want that relationship with God like I did when I heard Tevye say,
yeah,
if I could only have 7 hours, you know, that touched my heart in a unique and powerful way that led me to search for a Judaism
where you could
that,
have that
I could have that.
Yeah.
Right.
It's awesome.
Yeah, I love Fiddler on the Roof. I do love the, I guess we'll call it a caricature of a prayer life, you know, because he's got kind of two, you know, he's almost like throughout the movie, he's constantly like, Lord, why would you do this? Lord, what about that? And then, of course, he's also like praying liturgically, like he gets home right before Shabbat and he's saying his Sabbath prayers as, you know, man of the house, and his wife's trying to, you know, interject to get him to, you know, go talk to Laser Wolf about marrying off one of their daughters. And he's like, shh, and starts praying. And, and then he finishes and she's like, amen. And you're like, okay, now here's what you need. Blah, blah, blah. And so, like, I do love that, you know, just how that's characterized in that movie. But anyway, the thing that came to mind when y'all mentioned it yesterday in the group chat that we would do an episode on this was probably one of my favorite movies. Actually, also one of my favorite books. The book was written in like late 1800s, early 1900s. And there's actually two movies. There's a black and white movie, and then there's a color movie. I've never seen the black and white, but the color one is probably my favorite, early 2000s, called The Four Feathers. Mm-hmm. And it's the premise of the movie is there's a bunch of guys who are all in the British Army together, and they get orders to go to the Sudan. And so they're basically they're going to go and, you know, fight for the queen, you know, protect the realms of the British Empire. And one of them backs out and leaves the army. He's like, I don't. So his friends all send him in the mail. They all send him these white feathers of cowardice, you know. And so he spends the rest of the movie like redeeming himself. Like he actually travels to the Sudan, like by himself, not with the army, and actually like rescues his friend, several friends, after this ambush and things. And, you know, kind of by the end of the movie, all is forgiven, you know. He marries the girl, yada yada, all that jazz. But one of the characters in this movie that he meets in the desert that saves his character saves his life. You know, he's dehydrated. He has no idea where he's going. He's lost. He's got his camel, but then the camel, like, you know, he falls off the camel. He's so malnourished, dehydrated, and this guy finds him. And it's never made clear what this guy was like religiously, because like he's a very religious individual. Like when he saves this guy's life and he's kind of, you know, toddling along with him in the desert, he wakes up one morning and this guy's praying and he's got like a little like thing of incense going, you know, and he's like, it looks like, so like, he could be a Muslim, but Muslims don't really do incense right there with them when they're praying. So it's like, okay, so, and so he clearly must not be that. But so it's never made clear what he is, but he's definitely what we would call a God-fearer. Like, he clearly understands that there is a God and that there's a clear distinction between good and evil, righteous, unrighteous, you know, bravery versus cowardice, that kind of thing. And one of the quotes that has and, you know, and he helps this guy rescue his friends, you know, and so, like, he's kind of like this random stranger who he meets in a desert with this guy, and he helps this guy, you know, do all these things, and even imparts a lot of wisdom to him, which, you know, develops the British character's character growth along the story. But one of the quotes that he says, he asks him, you know, why, I'm an Englishman, you know, why would you rescue me out in the desert, you know, because it's difficult, you know, you got to pick me up, you got to put me on a camel, you got to give me water and food, like, why would you bother with me? And he looks at him, he's like, you know, God put you in my way, you know. And I'm like, and that quote has, and then he gives that quote to his fiance too when they get married in the end, because, you know, she had left him because of his cowardice and everything, and he's redeemed at the end. And so she's like, so now what are we going to do? Like, are we going to get married? Are things going to go on as they once were? And he's like, well, you know, God put you in my way. And so, like, it'll kind of leading us to think, oh, yeah, things will, they'll continue as all things will end well.
Right.
And that quote has kind of stood with me. Especially in regards to dealing with events and people,
no one's
problems that crosses my path are unworthy for me to deal with. Like, I'm not somehow above this person and their problem they're bringing to me, because, you know, and I know it's not a scriptural thing necessarily, but the idea that, you know, God puts you in my way. Is that, like, yeah, like, you know, God very, very likely possibly did put this person in my path, and or at least knew this person was going to cross my path.
Yeah.
And that how I interact and how I deal with this person or event will reflect off of how my relationship with God is at that point. And if my relationship with God is strong and good at that point, then likely I'm going to deal with that person in a righteous way. If I'm lacking in my relationship with God, it's very likely that my dealing with that person will, you know, I won't rescue the man in the desert, you know.
Sure.
I won't pick him up and give him water and, you know, take care of him. But if I'm living my life in that way where God puts you in my way, you know, God is dealing with me, God is guiding me, right, then I'm going to rescue the person who clearly in front of me needs rescuing. You know, I'm going to embrace the event or opportunity or person that God has clearly allowed to be in my presence. So
when was the last time you watched that?
It's a few years ago at this point. Maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
Okay.
Cause it's not even, I don't even own the movie. Like it's my parents owned it. And, again, it's not, there are a couple parts in that movie that aren't family friendly. So again,
yeah,
good Vin Angel would be, it's a war movie. It's an adventure movie, war movie.
No, I like it.
So I grew up, along, you know, Rabbi Toby's right there with me. Technically Toby's like a year and change, 2 years older than I am.
Yeah.
But, you know, grew up in the 80s and 90s, and particularly grew up with the ABC's TGI Friday lineup. you know, the early years of the TGI Friday lineup.
Family Matters.
You had Family Matters, and you had Full House, Step by Step, the Dinosaurs, all of that, right? Not the Mama.
Sabrina, the Teenage Witch.
I was a part of that, yeah. And then you also had, like, Home Improvement, which wasn't necessarily part of that. It was a different lineup. But the thing that really sticks with me to that, and you don't, I mean, you kind of see it to some degree, but the you don't see it as much anymore today as we used to. The thing that really stuck with me with all of those episodes is they had one, like, constant theme through all of those series, right? There was always a member of the family. It was always, you know, centered around a family. There was always a member of the family that did something that kind of royally screwed everything up for everybody, and the whole episode was fixing that,
right?
And you see the emotional turmoil that it causes to different members of the family and their network, their community, whatever. You see the different emotional toils and the torment and all the cause and effect realities of the choices of the individuals. And it was usually the kids or, you know, that, you know, and still it's even worse today, but that line always liked the style of show always liked to make the dad look like an idiot in a lot of cases,
yeah,
and whatever.
It's unfortunate.
But, you know, there's always somebody makes an intentional choice. They do something, and then there's a cause and effect to that. You know, they do something, it causes a problem, that problem affects other people. But the thing that always stuck to me with all of those style shows, the you know, early sitcoms and all, or not early sitcoms, but the sitcoms from the 90s and 80s and 90s, is that they always had a resolve. Either it was by the end of that half-hour episode, or it would be a two-part, and
a
by the end of the second,
episode,
yeah, by the end of the second, there would be a resolve. But that resolve was always focused on one key factor, which I think is the core of everything that we believe as believers in Yeshua. That resolve was always on redemption and restoration.
Yeah,
right. There was always redemption and restoration. The problem was solved. It was fixed. There was forgiveness that was sought. There was forgiveness that was given, and then there was always a restoration. So it always ended with the family still loving each other,
right,
with the family still there for each other, with somebody's arms around somebody's neck. Somebody was crying, and now they're all laughing together at the end of the episode. And yet you don't see a lot of resolve anymore. There's, you know, like the big thing is the cliffhanger. Every episode of a,
sure,
of a season now of almost anything has to have a cliffhanger that gets you to come back to the next episode. And then at the end of the series, there's not a resolve anymore. There's a cliffhanger for the next season,
right?
And what have you. But there's something to that resolve, particularly that idea of redemption and restoration, that I think made the 80s and 90s sitcoms so important. I mean, they really were. Like, my family sat around and watched, you know, like Family Matters and Full House. And
Carl Winslow was a sharp,
yeah,
dad.
Oh, I loved that show. And that was one of the few where the dad was not,
yeah,
presented as an idiot.
By the way, I would just love to have a hug from Carl Winslow. He's just like, he was one of my TV dads.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, he was great. And it still is. I mean, is it Progressive, I think, that's using,
yeah,
kind
he's
of like
the dad,
him
TV
as
dad,
like a pseudo character similar to, yeah, what he was on that. But that home Improvement, all of these, the family, the nucleus family was the thing that held it all together.
Yeah.
And there was always a choice, that a negative choice, cause and effect, a resolve that brought about redemption and restoration that was always at the crux of everything in those type of series. And I think it speaks a lot. Like, it was important to me. It still is. It speaks a lot to me. And I think that it speaks a lot into the reality of what it is we believe as followers, mm-hmm, of Yeshua,
right,
even though it's,
yeah,
secular TV shows and whatever.
Yeah, a movie that really influenced me when I was young was this movie called Cheaper by the Dozen, and not the one with Steve Martin that was later produced.
The one with Steve Martin is trash.
Yeah, but the early
100%
one,
trash.
Yeah, but the early one, and so it says,
tell us what you really think.
There's this guy who's and his wife, and he's got 12 kids, and he's a time management specialist. So he goes into businesses and helps them to reorganize how they do things so that they can use their time in the best way.
Sounds like something your dad would have been good at.
Yeah, really good at.
Efficiency expert.
He's an efficiency expert. Yeah. But anyhow, there's a scene in the movie where his daughters, who are very, he's very conservative, and his daughters dress conservatively, have long, uncut hair, you know, long hair as was the style then, but things were changing and the girls were bobbing their hair. They were cutting their hair short and they were wearing revealing swimsuits and stuff. So
for then what he was considering
time.
Revealing was like, we would be like, oh wow, they must be Muslim, you know, or something.
So modest. There's this scene where they go to the beach and the family's there with their full body swimsuit kind of things and all that. And the oldest daughter wants to be popular, wants to be part of this group, and she talks to this young man who was hanging out with these girls, and he makes a statement which I still remember today, and he said to her, she says something to him, and he says, no, those are the type of girls guys want to date, but you're the type of girl guys want to marry. And it was such a significant statement of, look, girls who don't respect themselves, don't respect their who they are, that become whatever they think they need to in order to get a date, to be with a guy or whatever. Guys will mess with them, guys will use them, but girls that guys want to marry are girls who have a respect for themselves, respect for who they are, don't bend to the whim of popularity and all that. That the respect, it wasn't a matter of, because this girl was every bit as pretty, every bit as smart, every bit as any of the other girls that were around her. It wasn't a matter of those things, but it was really a matter of, you respect who you are. You aren't bowing to the whim of popular culture, changing with every style that comes along, doing all that. You're the type of girl that guys want to marry. And those other girls that'll do anything to be with anybody, that's the one that guys just want to hang out with. They want to be with for a short time, but there's no commitment going to be involved in that.
Did anybody – you guys have probably seen Dead Poets Society.
Oh, yeah. Great movie.
That's a great movie. I think that's a good movie about discipleship.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've not seen it, it's this private school, really upper echelon private school. And Robin Williams comes in to teach poetry, literature type, you know. And he's so different, you know. The first thing he has the students do is, like, rip the intro out of the poetry book, you know. And, of course, immediately there's people that begin to take in the school, like, above him, like the, I guess the administrators, the chancellors of the school or whatever, begin to take notice, obviously, because he's going against the... he's going against what had always been done.
Right.
But he begins to change these kids' lives. It's almost like a Yeshua and the Disciples type story. Right. I love the scene where he, Ethan Hawke's character, who's like, you know, one of the main characters, he's struggling with his creativity. So remember, he puts his hand over his eyes, just makes him like kind of just letting it flow out, the poetry. And it's like incredible. I never forget, he gets done with that, and he points at him and says, remember this. Like, remember this moment, you know? It was like his salvation moment, you know? Again, I'm just putting religious terms to that. And, of course, again, spoiler alert, he ends up getting banished from the school.
Right.
Because some stuff happens. Nothing that he did. But he ends up, and, of course, as he's being led out of the school, the kid, his closest students, you know, the ones he really impacted stood up on the desks, you know, and said,
my captain.
Yeah. And he's like, thank you, boys. Thank you. Which tells me, yes, he's gone.
Right.
But he's not really gone because those kids, those boys are going to do what he did.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that's what Yeshua did. Like, he's like, I have to go. But, you know, I left myself behind in you. And I just love that story. It's hard to watch because it's as good as it is. There's a lot of really heart-wrenching stuff in it, you know, that's really tragic. But it just, for me, it speaks to me about discipleship and kind of what Yeshua did. He came in for a brief time, and he turned these guys' world upside down. And then he left, you know.
Right.
But he didn't really leave because those guys kept doing his work, and that's why we're here, you know. It's, you know, beautiful story there.
Remember School Ties?
No, I didn't see that.
Brendan Fraser. It's the first movie I watched with Brendan Fraser where I actually said, wow, he can act.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it, it's from early 90s, like maybe 92 or something like that. If you haven't seen it, you got to watch it. So Brendan Fraser is this this Jewish kid. He's good at football. Gets a scholarship to go to this private school, but everybody in the school is they're all, you know, high and wealthy, whatever. But they're all right. Anti-Semitic.
Oh,
or not necessarily all of them, but enough of them that it's like
it
the predominant theme that he keeps facing. And so he's got to make the choice on nobody knows he's Jewish. He's got to make the choice on how he's going to live his life. In particular, it's surrounded about whether or not he's going to do something. Was it Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur? I think it's Yom Kippur. Whether or not he's going to do something on Yom Kippur or not. And but it's, gosh, it's such a good movie. And for portraying the struggle, the internal struggle, particularly as a Jewish person in society, but I think it's true today, especially of being believers as well, that internal struggle of how much of yourself you're willing to really share.
Right.
And if you're not willing to share it, is it really a real part
right.
of who
and,
you are?
Yeah, are you willing to hide your faith and your belief mm-hmm. system in order to prosper in the world, in order to be part of the successful? In the that case of yeah. the movie, not only was it about his scholarship to go to this elite school, but about what jobs and such he'd have afterwards, yeah. about the girl that he fell in love with, about all, you know, all of those things were based upon him pretending to yeah. be a Protestant Christian.
Yeah. And it presented him, it made conflict with his family because he's having to put on this show that his family wasn't happy with, and you know, in their perspective, it was just for a game or just for the scholarship or whatever. Really, really great movie. By far, one of Brendan Fraser's best performances.
Yeah, I was shocked that he could act.
Yeah,
because all the other movies that he'd done up until time that were those stupid comedy kind of things.
Right. And it had everybody. I mean, you've got Brendan Fraser, Matt Damon, Chris O'Donnell's in it. Ben Affleck was in it. Like, this is everybody's, like, intro.
Right.
Like, this such a great movie.
Into the world of it.
Yeah, and yeah. again, I watched it on television, where the language and things would have been removed if there was any. So we're not endorsing you to go out and rent the movie if it's not rated.
And if memory serves, there was language in it. I mean, but that era and what they were dealing with and wrestling with and whatever. But nonetheless, great movie in terms of, and speaking to what we're dealing with today, in terms of really cultivating a perspective of how you live your walk with the Lord out in society, how it affects your faith, what your faith affects in the rest of your life. And, you know, as Rabbi Toby was talking with Thor, are you willing to give up everything for God? Are you willing to give up everything to walk in that way? And, you know, I talked about this at CMC recently, that Yeshua tells us that the world's going to hate us. Like, he warns us in advance. Everybody's got this notion that being a follower of Yeshua is going to make your life easy and hunky-dory and whatever. But he specifically says the world will hate you. Mm-hmm. But it's not you that they hate. It is the one that's inside of you. It's me in you that they hate. And so because of that reality, we need to one, realize that we have to give up everything for him. That includes our hopes and dreams of being whatever to the outside world, because what we need to be to the outside world most foremost is a representation of Yeshua. And so we need to be willing to throw everything aside, throw everything away to put him foremost. But also with that is that reality that requires a certain degree of sacrificial living. You know, you see that with Thor, as Rabbi Toby was saying. You see that with school ties, with Brendan Fraser trying to, you know, really wrestle with whether or not, you know, he wants people to know he's Jewish, or with Fiddler on the Roof and so on. You see that throughout. And so it's so important. We look at, I think, film and music and whatever, which we all ended up talking about film. Like the, I mean, I could go through a list of songs too, but some of
we
those
we may
I
do
probably,
a future episode on yeah. songs
I don't
that
know.
Affected us.
Some of the songs I might throw out there might get me in trouble, but
and maybe some books that we read in another episode.
Oh yeah,
but this, I think this has been fun to talk about. I love how, and when you talk to other people who are believers, they all have moments or times or experiences where God used something outside of. It wasn't just, I mean, I could look at my life and see the times where people spoke into my life, where, you know, I had a teacher that was very influential in sharing Jesus with me before I knew he was a Jewish guy. And, you know, I can see those times where believers actually interacted in my life and tried to share their faith with me. But I can also see times where different, even as we talk about secular movies, music, books, things like that, that God used those experiences
right.
to reach beyond. I don't think the people that wrote Fiddler on the Roof said, hey, we're going to make this movie so that Eric Tokajer will see it and long after and search after the Messiah. I don't think that happened with School Ties or Star Wars or Thor or any of these things. But I know that God can use different things to touch our hearts. And I would encourage you, do us a favor, whatever format that you're listening to, if God used a movie to touch your heart in the process of drawing you to Him, put the movie in there, let us know how it was. And how it worked and what influenced you. I'd be interested to find out how God used something outside the normal of evangelism to touch your heart through a movie, a TV program, or something like that. And again, in the future, we'll probably do an episode on music that affected us.
Right.
We'll probably have to leave Rabbi David out of that conversation. maybe books, and maybe even do an episode on people that influenced our lives outside of rabbis or pastors, but people that influenced our lives for the good. So anyhow, I hope you enjoyed the episode. I hope that it was meaningful to you. I hope it caused you to think of different influences that God used in your life that were out of the ordinary, and I hope you'll tune in next to our next episode.
I was going to say like and subscribe wherever you're
watching.
Wherever you're watching or listening.
Thank you for listening to the Messy Antics Podcast. Make sure to subscribe so you can be notified every time we drop a new episode. And be sure to follow and interact with us on social media at Messy Antics Podcast.